prayers for creative energy, text number 12. Nati prasidati tata pacitto pacare. Aradita suraganeri di badakamai. Yat sarva buddha daya yasatta labhya yeko. Nana janesu avahita suridantaratma. Never. Ati, very much. Prasidati, become satisfied. Tata, as much as. Upachita, by pompous arrangement. Upachare, with much worshipable paraphernalia. Haradita, being worshipped. Sudaganai, by the celestial demigods. Ridibadakamai, with hearts full of all sorts of material desires. Yad, that which. Sarva, all. Bhuta, living entities. Dayaya, to show them costless mercy. Asad, non-devotee. Alabhyaya, not being achieved. Eka, one without a second. Nana, various. Janesu. In living entities. Avahita, perceived. Surid, well-wishing friend. Anta, within. Atma, super-self. Translation. My Lord, you are not very much satisfied by the worship of the demigods who arrange for your worship very pompously with various paraphernalia, but are full of material hankerings. You are situated in everyone's heart as a supersoul just to show your causeless mercy, and you are the eternal well-wisher, but you are unavailable for the non-devotee. Purport. The demigods in the celestial heavenly planets who are appointed administrators of the material affairs, are also devotees of the Lord. But at the same time they have desires for material opulence and sense gratification. The Lord is so kind that he awards them all sorts of material happiness, more than they can desire. But he's not satisfied with them, because they're not pure devotees. The Lord does not want any of his innumerable sons, the living entities, to remain in the material world of threefold miseries, to perpetually suffer the material pangs of birth, death, old age, and disease. The demigods in the heavenly planets and many devotees on this planet also want to remain in the material world as devotees of the Lord and take advantage of material happiness. They do so at risk of falling down to the lower status of existence, and this makes the Lord dissatisfied with them. I'll speak on each paragraph separately. It's very interesting because in many cases, we find how some demigod has been cursed and then receives the mercy of the Lord. We may remember how there was a big serpent who swallowed Nanda Maharaj. He was in the process of swallowing Nanda Maharaj when all the residents of Vrindavan went to the Ambika forest for a pilgrimage. Ambika, of course, refers to Durga Devi, and it is not that they were regularly doing so, but sometimes they were also worshipping Durga. So they went there, and In that forest, Nanda Maharaj was practically swallowed by a huge serpent, and all the other cowherd men were beating the serpent with burning sticks, but it didn't help. But finally, when Krishna came, when he touched that serpent with his foot, then that serpent was transformed to a demigod who explained that he had been cursed in this way. And after that, the demigod was offering prayers to the Lord, being so pleased that he no longer had to go on in this horrible body, circumambulated the Lord and returned to his abode in the heavenly planets. And one may be amazed reading such a thing, because one may wonder, like, how could you, if you are right there with the Supreme Lord, voluntarily go away? Right? Why would you do such a thing? Would just stay there until he sends you away. But rather, the demigods, because they want to stay in the material world and they want to enjoy heavenly pleasures. That is why they are returning. There are many other examples. Also, when the fight was going on between Gajendra and the crocodile, we may recall that the crocodile was also a cursed demigod. And similarly so, after he had been delivered by the Supreme Lord Vishnu, he also returned to the heavenly planets. So this is a common affair. Because they're satisfied with the material world. At least that part of the material world, where they want to stay and enjoy forever. But there is no such thing, of course. It is foolishness, because it is temporary and ultimately ksine punam marche logam visanti. One has to again fall down to the lower planetary systems. Of course, those brahmanas who are engaged in karmakanda rituals, they are simply performing certain austerities and sacrifices with the purpose of attaining heavenly planets. And they know that they'll run out of karma and have to come down, but then again they'll perform punya to again ascend to the heavenly planets. In this way, they intend to continue with this cycle of going up to the heavenly planets and then coming down to perform more austerity. So this is mundane religion. These are the principles of dharma, artha, kama, moksha, or the principles of mundane religion. Such principles of mundane existence are not at all meant for the pure devotees. And I'll continue to read. Pure devotees are not desirous of any material enjoyment, nor are they averse to it. They completely dovetail their desires with the desires of the Lord and perform nothing on their personal account. So this is the spirit of detachment, that we are not attracted by the material energy, nor trying to avoid certain situations in the material energy, but we simply accept whatever needs to be done for Krishna. Therefore, every position is perfect. Krishna himself is in that mood. Krishna does not make any distinction between any position in this world. For Krishna, it was not a sacrifice to come down of his throne in Dwarka to place Sudama on that throne and to wash his feet and to personally fan him. He did not feel a little from like, wow, you know, I gave him my throne, right? And you'd feel like, I'm making a real sacrifice here. No, because to Krishna, one position in this material world is not better than another. Therefore, for Krishna, it doesn't make any difference whether he sits on the throne or whether he does not sit on the throne. But for Balaram, it does. Because when the Kuru dynasty at one point denied Krishna his royal paraphernalia, then Balaram became so angry. The Kuru said, how did Krishna dare to take the royal insignia, the royal umbrella and scepter and so many other signs of royalty? How did he dare? Right. And then Balaram became so angry that he practically pulled the city of the Kurus with his plow into the Yamuna. Right. At that time, they all came out offering prayers. You are the Supreme Lord. Actually, everything comes from you. Yes, then they remembered. So it is said that many of the demigods, they took their birth in the Yadu dynasty. So many of them had that very same mentality. And many of these demigods that took their birth to the Yadu dynasty, they returned to the heavenly planets after Lord Krishna left the planet. So even while Lord Krishna were there, we could see that they had that same spirit. And that they were becoming proud, but then when they were being reminded by Balaram, yes, then they were quickly offering prayers. Oh, my dear Supreme Lord, please do not be angry. You are, everything depends on you, etc. And glorification was there. The worship performed by the demigods is of the highest standard. It is inconceivable to us the amount of opulence that is being employed, the mantras that are being chanted, etc. But it says that this is not very pleasing to the Lord. It is not very satisfying, because the Lord does not particularly care about the complex rituals that may be prescribed in the Vedas, but he cares simply about a spirit of devotion. He cares about the mood. So our movement is based on that principle. The movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a movement which is not offering very complex arrangements of worship for the Supreme Lord, but rather there is a very simple means by which we worship the Lord. Our deity worship is also relevantly simple compared to what is going on in the other Vaishnava sampradayas. Things are quite simple. In South India, in the Sri Sampradaya and Sri Rangam, amazing things are being done. The Lord has many, many different palanquins, and it is said that he is being carried on these different palanquins, some in the form of a bird, some in the form of a boat, some in the form of a plane. And in this way, the Lord is being carried on these palanquins, and then the carriers of the palanquin, they are from special families. And these families, they train from their childhood different steps. And they have many different steps that they do. In some steps they walk like a lion, in some steps they walk like a bird, in some steps they're swaying up and down, or they have like a big rolling step, and they know many, many steps like this. And these are the official palanquin carriers, and they can walk for a very long time. And in this way, one can see the palanquin of the Lord coming down in a most amazing way, while brahmanas are reciting many mantras. And the opulence in the worship is absolutely amazing in the Sri Sampradaya. Right? The amount of awe and reverence that is being displayed is also tremendous. But still, the Lord is more attracted by spontaneous devotional service than by ritualistic offerings in awe and reverence. The Lord is simply most attracted by the simple devotion of the cowherd girls of Vrindavan, of the gopis of Vrindavan. They are the topmost devotees, and their service can attract the Lord the most. Still, it doesn't mean that Krishna then is neglecting any devotee, because Krishna is unlike the living entity, able of maintaining unlimited relationships. The living entity actually, when he becomes absorbed in love of God, it is mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion how Bhismadev stated that the love for Krishna is such that it does not allow any other love to exist side by side. Therefore, when one becomes fully absorbed in love of God, then there is no more room for anything else. In this way, all relationships of affection that exist in this world, they cannot continue. One can only see the Lord. Of course, one can love all living beings in connection with the Lord, in their connection with the Lord, because that is an extension of loving the Lord. Just like one loves someone through his dog. If you love his dog, then they love you too. Yes, this system is there. Yes. You're nice to the dog, then you are a nice person. So this is going on in relationships. So in this way, we may also be favorably disposed towards Krishna's devotees, but yet one who has love of God, he is can only see Krishna. Aham sarvasya prabhava matasavam pravartite iti mata bhajante man pudabhavasaman vita. It says, Aham sarvasya prabhava. Lord Krishna is everything, therefore one who loves Krishna automatically loves everything. But still, we are completely focused on Krishna. And the center of everyone's attention is Krishna. That is pure devotional service. The pure devotees, it is said, Srila Prabhupada is writing, they completely dovetail their desires with the desires of the Lord and perform nothing on their personal account. Arjuna is a good example. On his own sentiment, due to family affection, Arjuna did not want to fight. But finally, after hearing Srimad Bhagavad Gita, he agreed to fight in the interests of the Lord. Therefore, the Lord is very much satisfied with pure devotees, because they do not act for sense gratification, but only in terms of the Lord's desire. As Paramatma's supersoul, he is situated in everyone's heart, always giving everyone the chance of good counsel. Thus everyone should take the opportunity and render transcendental loving service to him and solely. The non-devotees, however, are neither like the demigods nor like the pure devotees, but are averse to the transcendental relationship with the Lord. They have revolted against the Lord and must perpetually undergo the reactions of their own activities. So the pure devotees are not concerned with their own position, but rather they're concerned with the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. So they are ready to make sacrifice. The demigods, they want a comfortable position and worship the Lord according to their desire. So here we see two basic principles. One principle is the principle of surrendering to the Supreme Lord and doing the needful. The other principle is the principle of dovetailing one's propensities. We're seeing that the demigods, they want to dovetail their propensities. They want to serve the Lord, but in the particular way according to their liking. So in our movement, we also see the two types of mentalities, the dovetailing mentality and the mentality to do the needful. So the mentality to do the needful is truly the mentality of the pure devotee, who really does not care for any selfish purpose. Krishnendriya pritiyacha dhara premanam. Such a devotee has only one desire, to satisfy the senses of Krishna. Not admendriya pritivancha tarabolikam. Or one who is trying to satisfy his own desire is still under the influence of lust. So this is what is going on. So being under the influence of lust means that one is karma misra, that one's activities are mixed with karma. So the demigods are engaging in karma yoga, in karma misra bhakti, because they are acting according to their own desire. They're fulfilling their own desires while doing devotional service. So they want to combine the two. I'll fulfill my desires and the desires of the Lord simultaneously. Still, it is completely natural that a person will be inclined to serve the Lord in a way that he knows how to do. In other words, according to his nature. It is natural, if one is very good in making beautiful decorations that one wants to make decorations for the Lord. It is natural if one is a great actor that one wants to perform very nice plays for the Lord. So this is not entirely the same as dovetailing one's nature. Because the difference is that a person who's in the spirit of dovetailing doesn't want to do anything else, whereas one who may serve the Lord according to his nature may also do other things when they are required. So this is the natural level of devotional service. And that is the kind of devotional service that we are trying to teach in this movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In this movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we are trying to bring people to the point of surrender in devotional service. The principle is surrender, but still there is room to do the activity that one is naturally good at and naturally attracted at. But not always. Sometimes we must do the needful. So in this way, the Sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is being presented. And this is very nice. But it is different than the demigods who basically just want to do what they desire in service to the Lord. So Arjuna gave up his family affection and fought for the Lord. It says here, it continues, therefore the Lord is very much satisfied with pure devotees because they do not act for sense gratification but only in terms of the Lord's desire. As Paramatma or Supasoul, he is situated in everyone's heart, always giving everyone the chance of good counsel. Thus everyone should take the opportunity and render transcendental loving service to him wholly and solely. The non-devotees, however, are neither like the demigods, nor like the pure devotees, but are averse to the transcendental relationship with the Lord. They have revolted against the Lord and must perpetually undergo the reactions of their activities. So this is another matter. The non-devotees, they will be smashed by the Lord again and again in so many ways. And even if temporarily they may get some sense enjoyment, it is only going to be a setup for suffering in the future. Therefore, the non-devotees will be whipped around by the material energy until they come to the point of atato brahma yigyasa, of inquiring into the absolute truth. And until that time, they'll just have to be suffering under the influence of the threefold miseries in the material world till they come to their senses. This is the system. What can I say? This is the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. And there is no other arrangement. Suffering is the name of the game. Just as when Jayadvaita Maharaj was walking in New York, a policeman asked him and said, "What are you guys all about? You know? What do you actually have to give up?" And Maharaj said, "Suffering." And then the cop looked at him and said, "Makes sense." Because he was a New York cop, you know. He saw plenty of it, right? So he thought for a moment. He said, "Yeah, these guys give up suffering." Bhagavad Gita 4.11 states, Yeyatamam prapadyamte tamstataiva bhajami aham. Although the Lord is equally kind to every living being, the living beings for their own part are able to please the Lord to either a greater or lesser extent. The demigods are called Sakama devotees, or devotees with material desires in mind, while the pure devotees are called Niskama devotees, because they have no desires for their personal interest. The Sakama devotees are self-interested because they do not think of others and therefore they are not able to satisfy the Lord perfectly, whereas the pure devotees take the missionary responsibility of turning non-devotees in devotees and they are therefore able to satisfy the Lord more than the demigods. So we may have material desires. That is obvious. But still, we may deal with them in a different way than the demigods, because we may be ready to ignore material desires for the sake of performing devotional service. Though we may find that it's not possible to ignore all material desires and that there may be some arrangement, but the demigod in principle does not want to ignore material desires. He wants to fulfill them and serve the Lord at the same time. So this is a different. As a devotee who has some material desires, but who is trying to come to the platform of surrender. So that is our path. So, of course, there are different devotees, different standards in our movement, and our movement is very broad and accommodating and is ready to give everyone a chance. So even if you only want to do that one particular service that you like, and therefore you do only that one, all right, you can do that too, if that's the way you want it. But it's a lower platform, because the higher platform is to simply surrender to the intelligence of superiors. This is the principle in spiritual life, to not depend on one's own intelligence, but to depend on the intelligence of superiors. Therefore, as one becomes purified in devotional service, one becomes more and more soft-hearted and more and more dependent. One will ask the Vaishnavas for blessings before proceeding on an idea. It's not that first start doing it and then try to get it sanctioned, right? But it is actually before doing, asking, and asking if it is blessed by the Vaishnavas, and only doing it when it has the blessings of the Vaishnavas. Not first doing it and finding justifications for it and saying, no, it's all right what I'm doing, you can't condemn it because there are actually some references in some particular scripture which indicate that this is also possible. Therefore, it's bona fide what I'm doing. You cannot argue, right? But this is not the spirit. It is not, although Prabhupada said that the scriptures should be, that we should treat them just as law books, as a lawyer knows his law books, it isn't meant that we are looking at various loopholes in the scriptures which give us room for maintaining our material attachments. But rather, in this movement, we should be ready to sacrifice our material desires, although it may not be possible to give them up in our heart, but we may give them up in practice. Then the heart will follow. Abhyasa yoga yuktena setasana nyagamina. It is by this process of practice in devotional service that the heart will change. I'll continue reading. The Lord is unmindful of the non-devotees, although he's sitting within everyone's heart as well-wisher and super-soul. However, he also gives them the chance to receive his mercy through his pure devotees who are engaged in missionary activities. Sometimes the Lord himself descends for missionary activities, as he did in the form of Lord Chaitanya, but mostly he sends his bona fide representatives, and thus he shows his causeless mercy towards the non-devotees. So Prabhupada is stressing that the importance of preaching Krishna consciousness, and to somehow or other voluntarily take difficulty in this preaching. That is the difference. Not to have a comfortable life in Krishna consciousness, but to voluntarily take the austerities of pushing on this movement. So this is what this movement was for. Prabhupada pointed out that primarily this movement of Krishna consciousness is for spreading Krishna consciousness. It is not to create a nice facility for people to live. It is actually meant for spreading Krishna consciousness. That was Prabhupada's main purpose in creating the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Although these days it may not be the focus of many, still we should somehow or other spread Krishna consciousness. And that is the main thing. The main thing is not to on a personal level go deeper and deeper into all kinds of refined aspects of the philosophy. If we are not using this refined knowledge for the sake of preaching, if we are simply using it for ourselves, then it becomes a kind of intellectual sense gratification, right? Which is maybe very inspiring, but it is still not sufficient to satisfy the heart fully. In such a case, one will continue to struggle with material desire. The most effective way to conquer all material desire is preaching Krishna consciousness. It is said that in the Nectar of Devotion that Draupadi, when she was being disrobed, that she prayed to Krishna as her protector. And Krishna did protect her. It says, but a preacher by dint of his preaching, he becomes the servant of the interest of Krishna. And therefore, he becomes the upholder of Krishna's interest. Therefore, a preacher develops the mentality of becoming the protector of Krishna. So it says in the higher rasas, right, of Vatsalya and Madhurya, this sense of protection is particularly there. It says that therefore the Sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in particular develops the higher rasas. Yes. So as a preacher, we can develop the spirit that Krishna should be protected by us, that his interests should be protected by us. So this is the higher path. So this is a point that Prabhupada makes in the Nectar of Devotion, which is giving some more background to the fact why he establishes the Gosti Anandi as higher than the Bhajan Anandi. The Gosti Anandi being the preacher and the Bhajan Anandi just absorbed in worship of the Supreme Lord. Of course, it is also higher because it is more pleasing to the Lord, because the Lord desires that all living entities go back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, anyone who is trying to assist the Lord in this great work is priyakritama, most dear to the Lord. So this is an important principle. So it is nice that we are here in Amsterdam, so that we can preach. Right? There's no other reason why this place is nice. This place is hell, as Prabhupada pointed out. It is a hellish place. And if we think differently, then we fall and prey to the illusory energy. Because all the material energy and varieties of sense gratification that are available in Amsterdam are just garbage. Right? And if we are into such garbage, then it is because we have a crow-like nature. Right? So crows, they go for garbage. But by the process of devotional service, Srila Prabhupada says that crows can be turned into swans. And that is our business. So this process will turn crows into swans. And that is very nice. So the swans, they have no liking for such a place as Amsterdam. But they somehow or other will take the austerity of coming to this place for the sake of preaching. And when it comes to preaching, this place is very nice. Because there's so much opportunity. So we could do much more. We could be more creative and more active and reach more people. And that should be our main occupation. Living in Amsterdam is not so important. So even in that sense, we cannot spend our time looking after the temple all day. Better we keep it simple and just go out as much as we can, right? Instead of sitting indoors and arguing over who's going to be the temple commander and who's going to be in charge of the cleaning and who's going to be in charge of writing the roster, and who's going to be in charge of anything. More important is to just give that to those who are physically less able, and those who are physically a little able, go out and preach. Those who have a little energy, go out and meet people. That should be our primary objective. Then Krishna will reciprocate, and everything will come from that. It is that preaching that is our main activity, our main business. Then finances will follow, facilities will follow. This is the real means by which things will grow, by preaching. So we should jump on the main stage here in Amsterdam to somehow or other deliver all the conditioned souls. That would be the best thing to do. Flood the place with prasadam and harinam, because that's what Srila Prabhupada suggested. But of course there is a whole cultural part of the city, of people who are occupied with culture, which is a very powerful means of presenting the philosophy. So we should tap into all these, and we should use our intelligence and our best manpower for these purposes. The managers should spend their time to create facilities for preaching so that preachers can preach, and in this way we might make more of an impact. That should be our spirit, to somehow or other touch the conditioned souls. Any questions or comments? Gornitai manifests himself simply through kirtan. So when there's kirtan going on, then Gornitai manifests himself. And it counts as good as installation. So in that way, there is no need for a formal installation ceremony with Gornitai, nor is there a need to consider that maybe more present or less present. The essence of our worship is kirtan and some prasadam. When we first brought Gornitai back to Amsterdam, right, then both myself and Sahotra Maharaj were stressing that point, and that it wasn't required to make the deity worship too complex in the case of worship of Gornitai. Still, it became quite complex, I must say, from my perspective. And I must say that the standard of worship here is at this point quite elaborate compared to many, many other temples and preaching centers all over Europe. As I'm traveling around, I'm noticing that again and again. It is all right, and it is a fact that once you start, then it is not a whimsical thing. But the worship of the Lord should not become our main preoccupation in the cities. Not that we all become pujaris. Our business in the cities is to perform simple deity worship in a spirit of devotion, and to just go out and preach as much as we can. That is first. But Gornitai is as much present with or without the deity installation. Yeah. They have wives, and they're just somehow or other married. But they don't really care very much about that relationship of being with their partner, just serving Krishna together. So it's not like that they're having a double relationship, and they're also spending some time enjoying with their wives and how nice it is. They're always focused on serving Krishna together. So Krishna, or in that case Vishnu, is the center of their activities. Although they may be going, husband and wife may be going around, flying around in planes, etc., but the focus of their attention is all the time Krishna. So in that way it's possible to have these relationships. But the relationship with Krishna then, is or Vishnu, is always more important than the relationship with the partner. This movement is a pure devotional movement. It is meant for only one purpose, to 100% surrender everything to Krishna. Still, this is a very merciful movement. So therefore, this movement also picks up conditioned souls who cannot do that, who cannot fully surrender unto Krishna. The process that this movement offers is a process of pure devotional service. And anyone who gets in contact with this movement is being placed in that process of pure devotional service. In the beginning, he may have some difficulties of making a connection, but still, because the process is powerful and pure, eventually he'll become more steady in the process. The demigods, they are having a lot of facility for themselves. They live in beautiful palaces, they have beautiful wives, they have beautiful gardens and everything rich and opulent. And they're very pious. They are very qualified. They are very powerful. They have great learning. They have tremendous abilities. And they are generally situated in the mode of goodness. We are generally situated in the mode of passion and ignorance, but we are now purifying that nature by situating ourselves in a pure devotional process. In that way, in our movement, everyone is situated in pure devotional service, although not everyone is a pure devotee in that sense. Not everyone is a pure devotee in the sense that he's completely free from karma and jnana. He's not on the platform of anyabhilasita sunyam. But in another sense, he may be called a pure devotee because he's situated in the pure process. The demigods are simply in the mood of maintaining material attachments, but in a very pious way, always according to the prescribed religious principles, not breaking away from that, doing it all nicely in the mode of goodness, but nonetheless very conscious of their own satisfaction. In this movement, we are calling for sacrifice. Yes. In this movement, we call, we put you in the kitchen to wash pots until you've come to the point that you can appreciate it. And as long as you hate it, then this is the service for you. That is the process. And then we are performing book distribution. And there also, we have to conquer ourselves. So this is a movement which in principle is meant for conquering our material nature. We have to do what is difficult to become strong so that we can surrender more and more. So there are many challenges to meet. But the devas, their commitment is to live according to the scriptures and to act pious and to offer respect to the Supreme Lord as the Supreme Controller, the Supreme Benedictor. Devotees through ISKCON may also go to heavenly planets if they develop this spirit of dovetailing material desire over the spirit of doing the needful. Therefore, many devotees through this movement may go to the heavenly planets. From in that situation, the sense gratification is so good and so much available that one will become attached to it, and therefore it is very difficult to go up from there, although it is possible. But generally speaking, you'll just get in the mood of enjoying and then ksine punya marchaloka visanti, coming down again to this planet, where the suffering brings us to our senses. The anger of the Lord is always very kind and loving. It said in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the description of the Daksha Yajna, in one particular purport, there is a description. So the anger of the conqueror is the anger that wants to crush, that wants to destroy, that wants to eliminate, and so forth, until there is not the slightest apparent to hit the child. But he will do. So in this way, Lord Balaram wasn't very, with great pleasure, cutting off the head of Romahasana. I, the Supreme Lord, am enjoying my power by cutting heads. Not like that. Lord Balaram was not happy that this had to be done, but he could see that it was unavoidable. So yes, to teach out of his mercy. He cares for the royal position of Krishna, not for his own. Because Balaram is Sevak Bhagavan. He is the first servant of the Lord. Therefore, Balaram is always in the mood of serving Krishna. And therefore, if Krishna in any way is not respected, then Balaram is like becoming very upset. Whereas Krishna himself is not becoming very upset about it. But Balaram will not tolerate it. Can't say. Never read anything about it. Good question. This is a topic for Puranic study. Maybe there's some reference. That's the last word. We should depend on the intelligence of our authorities.
I have no intelligence.
Well, if the authorities are wrong, even if one follows such authorities, then one is right. Prabhupada pointed that out. And because this point started to come up as Prabhupada was investing more and more responsibility in temple presidents who were like not experienced and new devotees, and so many problems were there. So Prabhupada again and again was saying, but you follow anyway. Of course, with a certain, not that we are then giving up our own intelligence. When we are seeing that the authority is maybe inexperienced and maybe not always acting on not taking always great and wise decisions, we use our own intelligence. We go along with the, we cooperate. We use our own intelligence to cooperate. We support him. And we may, rather than compete with him, because he's not sufficiently intelligent in certain situations, we may be more intelligent, we just use our intelligence to kind of back him up. So we're filling in like the little loose ends, etc. But we're not getting into a spirit of competition with him. But we support him. That is the Krishna conscious approach of a servant. No, there's just some more maturity there. It doesn't, when I say we ask for the blessings, it doesn't refer to, you know, is it one or two, you know, like it's not like in the school, you know, where you have to give a signal with your finger and about going to the toilet. We do not need to ask permission for these things, over minor things. Right? It is more maturity involved. So the asking the blessings is for more major issues. But actually, within the scope of what is blessed, there is a lot of room for using one's intelligence. And it is required. Like we may bless a certain person to go on book distribution, but then he'll have to use his intelligence himself. He cannot expect that the management will all take care and do everything perfect. He himself has to fill in the gaps and somehow or other make it work. Like that. So there is such a thing as cooperation. This whole movement is very much based on cooperation. And Prabhupada asked us to do that. And it was very difficult. Amongst Prabhupada's followers, there were great difficulties for cooperation. Some of his very most qualified men had great difficulties with each other because they, you know, like one could really see how to do things better. Like there was one person in charge of BBT and he was arranging for printing of many books, and then there was another one who was not in charge, but he had ideas of how to print books cheaper and faster. And at one point he just did it. Right? And he did print them cheaper and faster, etc. But still Prabhupada wanted that somehow or other such competition would not be there. He wanted that there would be cooperation, so that somebody would step back to give room to someone else and support him, assist him, but not compete. And all this heavy competition that has come over who is right and how to do things has created all kinds of fraction and war within our movement, and many people have been burned out in the process. And the one who burns today will be burned tomorrow by the laws of karma. So, therefore, this is a tricky business. So, we ask blessings. And then, for the rest, we cooperate. Okay. So, you mentioned different authorities, spiritual authorities, managerial authorities, GBC, who is like kind of an authority, a very senior authority in our movement, who are sanctioning spiritual leaders, etc. So the managerial authority may refer in particular to a temple president. Spiritual authority may refer to guru, right? Like that? Is that how I should see more? All these relationships are there. So there is the relationship with the temple president. He's not exclusively a managerial authority because he's also a manager in a spiritual movement. So he must also be taken as a spiritual authority, but he's not an absolute spiritual authority like the spiritual master. But we must cooperate with him, and we must not undermine his authority. Right? We must support his authority in our behavior and our words. And that is not so easy, because at times we may not always feel comfortable. In choosing a spiritual master, there are several considerations. One is that the person must be a perfect example of acting according to the scriptures. Two is that he must be a dearmost servant of his own spiritual master, and that his focus must be just to please his own spiritual master. That his meditation is always the instruction of his spiritual master. That is very safe. So he must be Guru Das. Then one may feel attracted to such a spiritual master, and then one may confirm it with senior devotees that one has faith in, that have accompanied one in spiritual life or have given relevant instruction, and therefore one has developed faith in their judgment. So one may get his own judgment confirmed in this matter. One doesn't decide these things just on his own and just that's it. One confirms. And after one has received also the blessings of those senior guides, etc., then one feels secure. Then one may test the spiritual master. You see, of course, one could, there may be, let us give an example, there may be 10 bona fide spiritual masters, yeah? And one might accept any one of them, and it would be all right. Spiritually, they might be all equally qualified. But still, they each have their own particular individual nature. And that particular individual nature may match the individual nature of a disciple. So if one finds a spiritual master who teaches and instructs in a way
that matches with one's own nature, then it is easier. It may be easier. And if one has a spiritual master who has a nature that is very opposite and whose instructions are always very demanding and very high and very strong and very difficult and completely against everything that one feels to do according to his own natural inclination, then it's going to be difficult. Then it's going to be a struggle. Of course, by this, then the surrender will be one of a grind. But if one follows such a spiritual master faithfully, one will become very much purified. So therefore, there are many considerations. There's the consideration of spiritual qualification, which is to be confirmed by Shastra and by his dedication to Guru, to his own Guru. That's very important. Yeah? And that it's being confirmed by other senior Vaishnavas in whom one has faith. And on a practical level, it could be much easier if there is also a good relationship on a practical level. And that will make it much easier to gradually advance. They were so qualified and so surrendered. And we are so unqualified, generally speaking, I'm saying, and generally so unsurrendered that we see that so many devotees have difficulty, right, in following the order of the spiritual master. Therefore, I'm saying it's practical. It's a practical consideration that we might consider that we find a spiritual master who is in a similar mood. That's very helpful. Right. If the mood is very... See, it's not just that somebody gives a far-out lecture which is very inspiring to you, and that is the consideration for taking initiation or not. That's not the point. That is one thing. So it may be very inspiring, the way someone gives a lecture. But then next to it, it should also be looked at, how is the person dealing with me in my personal matters in spiritual life? Because sometimes you see someone gives a great lecture and someone's very inspired in that way, but then the way that the person is kind of instructing on a practical level in the life of a devotee is sometimes more than the devotee can handle in terms of surrender, and then the devotee snaps in the relationship. Yeah. So these things are practical considerations which are also valuable. Yes. You should just think, this disciple is not to enhance my personal service situations, not that let me use this disciple. I have all these disciples so that I can use them for fulfilling my purposes, but rather these disciples belong to Prabhupada. They belong to Prabhupada's mission, as the GBC belongs to Prabhupada, as everyone belongs to Prabhupada. Let me somehow or other, see to it that they function nicely in Prabhupada's mission and take up some responsibility in that mission, and that they're personally happy and advancing in that mission. Like that, that's the principle. Good point. Okay, I think... But it is important to take shelter of senior Vaishnavas. We are talking that what went wrong after Prabhupada left the planet is that people were looking for some sort of replacement for Prabhupada. There was no replacement for Prabhupada, and everybody knew that. But then they kind of thought, well, then at least collectively, then a group will kind of fill in for Prabhupada. They cannot replace him, but at least they fill in for what he had to do. And everyone looked up at the 11 new spiritual masters. You may look at the early Vyasa Puja books of the new gurus, and you'll see that many of the God brothers were also making many, many offerings in there, right? And like quite surrendered, you know. Like, and then the years after that, there was a distinct change. But in the beginning, it's not just that a few ambitious leaders were going for the power, but it is also that the general body of devotees just wanted some very powerful leaders who were going to uplift them. So this principle has kind of developed in the zonal archaya system, where the Zon Lachaya system was a system where all leadership, all authority, all power was invested in one man in a particular area, and everything went to that one man. And this created a vertical structure where he was everything and everyone else was nobody. And the result was that all the God brothers became nobody. Or anybody who had some experience or seniority didn't count. There was only the real authority. So although now we don't have Zon Lachayas anymore, we have the remnants of the Zon Lachaya system. And therefore, there's still a lot is looked at the spiritual authority, the guru, but there's not sufficient respect, distribution of respect. As I discussed it with my spiritual master, who was of the opinion that the main problem of the Zon Lachaya issue is that there is not sufficient distribution of authority and respect. So therefore, I'm pointing out that we should take shelter of the senior Vaishnavas and ask them for blessings, ask them for advice, and in this way, the junior Vaishnavas will be benefited by a lot of good practical advice, and the senior Vaishnavas will feel appreciation and will feel that they can actually be part of this movement. Because otherwise, at one point, you become a dinosaur, you become kind of outdated, and then you are isolated, right, with the years. And you're no longer, you have standards that are different than the modern ones, and everyone looks at you like an oddball, you know, who is not to be taken completely serious. So this happened to so many older devotees that just became old-fashioned, right? They're not with it anymore. But the thing is, they're not with it anymore because we do not have a system where we involve everyone as a spiritual authority. So that's one point I wanted to stress, the need for involving senior devotees as spiritual authority. It will help our movement. Well, you know, like the some people, they are presenting these points in discussions about how our movement should reform. And some are adhering to that kind of philosophy that that would be a good idea. Others are pointing out that Srila Prabhupada himself had particular ideas and suggestions, and that we should look at those first, right? That they should be, and that with great faith we should just implement it the way Prabhupada wanted it. So some want to stay very close to the way Prabhupada implemented. Others are saying, no, Prabhupada was very open to changes, and according to time, place, and circumstances, we can now also consider this, these adjustments, etc. So I guess there's discussion on this matter. But it is a fact that Prabhupada's ideas should at least be taken notice of. We should study them. If we want to get involved in management, then we should study Prabhupada's ideas about management. Yeah. In other words, you know, like, I mean, yeah, I don't want to start open. I agree, your point is a consideration, and there are, of course, you know, when you talk about a topic like management, such a big topic, and so many opinions, so many people have experience, etc. So in a group with leaders in the movement, you could have like hour-long discussions about these things, and I think it's going on also. There are conferences on COM where this is done, and one can participate. I myself am now a little remote from all that. I'm smelling roses and looking at Bhagavatam. Yeah, sentiment is nice. There's something, you know, like just by looking at someone, we get an impression about the person. We read so many things, and we have a natural attraction to certain people just because of the way they deal. And such sentiment may be there, but such sentiment in itself may never be the criterion alone. It may be an indication from where we begin to think about a particular guru. Yes, maybe this one, definitely not that one. Right? That's all sentiment. But then it has to all be followed up by investigating. So the disciple must investigate how the spiritual master is performing, and the spiritual master performs how the disciple is performing. We discussed it yesterday that there is 1 year mentioned in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. So this 1 year is for that. So the disciple should see that the spiritual master is really following the scriptures and the standards. And he should, well, as I said, then check it further with the senior Vaishnavas, whom he has faith in, and so that he gets the blessings of all. Then it is done in a mature way, not only on sentiment, then it is a combination of sentiment and intelligence. And that is the way it should be done, not on sentiment alone. But sentiment is also there, yes, because we are not just intelligent beings, we are also sentimental beings. We have sentiments, and it's not that we deny our sentiments. Sentiments is part of our existence, so it belongs to that. It takes wisdom also to... Yeah, that's why listening to all the devotees is very important, because they can put another perspective on the sentiment. You see, like he's putting another perspective on the sentiment, because... Is he giving me cookies and flowers, and is he smiling at me every time he sees me? And then I feel so honored and enlivened that such a great devotee is thinking of me. Oh, I feel completely enthused. But like, then we get a more mature perspective on the sentiment presented by Paravida Prabhu, right? Who is presenting like, yes, but what is the long-term result actually of what he's doing? It may be... He may be raising eyebrows all the time, or he may be heavy, but actually by doing that, he's lifting me up to a higher standard and gives me better understandings. Actually, you can see that he's really helping me. He's my well-wisher. So therefore, it is certainly a matter to do in consultation with senior Vaishnavas. I think that is the bottom line. And then I think I'll end. Leave it at this and call it a day. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. No, you can't do Duma. He says I have to do it. Okay. It's the order of Paravida Prabhu. The real spiritual master never falls down. You know. You know, this is the childish, simple, oversimplified approach of someone who just wants to make complex things easy so that he doesn't have to feel bad. The reality is that Srila Prabhupada said that, generally speaking, a spiritual master is from the topmost class of devotees, whose words are as good as scripture, such as Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Narottam Das Thakur. But he said, but a spiritual master may also come from a less qualified position. But his qualifications will be that he is a perfect follower, that he's a very serious follower of such a bona fide spiritual master, of such a great spiritual master, Uttama Adhikari spiritual master. So, there are many quotes where Prabhupada points out that the Madhyam Adhikari can be a spiritual master. So, theoretically, a Madhyam Adhikari could fall down. It would not be impossible. But, of course, it's not that, logically speaking, he would fall down, because he, generally speaking, is very serious about following the orders of his own spiritual master, who is such an Uttama Adhikari, and in that way, he's perfectly situated, being purified and protected. It is only when he starts deviating, right, that he could fall down. And there is less chance that he will deviate. That some did deviate over the years and did fall down, we have seen, and that is unfortunate and gives us food for thought. Even those who are in positions of spiritual masters or renounced positions can think about that, of how to avoid fall down. And we could, as a whole, in our movement amongst senior men, think more about a program to protect spiritual masters from falling down. But it is like this, that one who is following the bona fide spiritual master Uttama Adhikari, and is himself an advanced Madhyam Adhikari, who's acting as a spiritual master, he acts as the instrument of Krishna. And Krishna works through him. And all the power of Krishna is coming through that person. When he falls down, then the connection is broken. Then the power of Krishna is no longer coming through the guru. No guru can deliver a disciple on his own strength. The guru is the vaya media of Krishna. He's the postman. Right? So in this way, when the message is delivered, it can deliver. Yeah? So the spiritual master delivers the message from Krishna, and that delivers the disciple. So if he does not change, then he can act as guru. So this whole argument is not a right argument. It is not supported by Srila Prabhupada. Think about the answer. And then ask me again later. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.